What's up, y'all, and welcome back to Found Bites, a game review series. My name is Brian, and I'll be your host. If you don't know about us, we're all about finding and testing out small, high-quality video games. This is a podcast that aims to respect your time and money as a gamer and a consumer by sifting through storefronts and sales to find those gems that may be worth your precious resources. But enough about the show. Let's get into our next game. Nobody Saves the World is the game for this week's episode. Nobody Saves the World is a 2022 top-down action RPG dungeon crawler, and it was developed by Drinkbox Studios, which we've definitely talked about before. And it was published in January of 2022 on PC, Xbox One, Series X and S, and then soon after it came to Switch, PS4, and PS5, so it's pretty much available everywhere now. What drew me to the game is, number one, knowing the developer. So Drinkbox Studios, we've definitely covered some games of theirs before, and sort of their notoriety, their art style, that's something that kind of sold me from the beginning. And the gameplay specifically is a nice combination of like a Trigger Witch or like a Zelda Link to the Past, and this fusion with like Final Fantasy V or like Felseal Arbiter's Mark, where you have, you know, class systems and whatnot. So you got sort of the top-down overworld adventure, dungeon delving of those Trigger Witches, those Link to the Past, and then you have the job system, the unlocking, combining active and passive moves, customizing, mixing and matching different abilities to different classes, and being able to, in real time, take care of enemy hordes, quick swap between loadouts for different jobs or classes. The game launched with an MSRP of $24.99. I got it on sale on PS5 for $22.49. I've been playing it on the PS5 and on the Portal. I've probably put in close to 15 hours at this point. I would say that looking around at some of the data on it, it would take maybe 20 to 25 hours just to beat, but thoroughly maybe a little more. There are physical editions that I've seen. Limited Run did a release on Switch, PS4, and PS5. I think those were available for $40. I think they're sold out on Limited Run's website, but I have seen them available on Amazon, and those are just the box, nothing like collector's edition-y. And the developer, we've talked about them before, Drinkbox, they're a small Canadian team, and we covered some of their games before. Recently, we covered Guacamelee, and before that, we covered Severed. Kind of distinct games, and this is also very different. Just the point of view has been different for each of them, but definitely similar, like, coloration and art style and things like that. And in terms of, like, where I heard it from, pretty much the buzz I got was from Sacred Symbols, a PlayStation podcast. I know Colin Moriarty is very big on Drinkbox Studios and has been a champion for their games for quite some time. But him and Chris both talked about Nobody Saves the World for a while. Definitely was hearing it a lot from them, so I decided to give it a shot. Let's talk gameplay for Nobody Saves the World. So like we said, this is a top-down adventure game a la Trigger Witch, Under Dungeon, Link to the Past. But let's get into just some of the basics. So you're walking around, you're moving, you can only move at one speed, you can move in all directions, and I believe diagonal as well. But there's a button that you can hold to keep facing a certain direction. So it's like when you move, you're strafing. This is going to be super important with some of the moves that you have in combat, almost like a Space Invaders or something like that, where you're like peppering shots to kind of hold off enemy hordes. You'll be able to interact with different things, and a prompt will come up signaling to press the X button on PlayStation. But this is just for talking to different NPCs, merchants, interacting with objects like opening up chests and things like that. And then you'll have the face buttons. Other than that, when there's not a prompt, all the face buttons are going to be used for sort of action combat abilities, and you'll be able to populate them as you level things up. And so you'll have like the basic one, and then you'll have advanced stuff, and we'll talk about forms and leveling up and customizing in a little bit. Traversal in this game is pretty simple, and again, reminding of games like Trigger Witch or Link to the Past, you're sort of in this overworld-like map, and you're seeing different areas. And the screens are going to be screen to screen, but you'll be able to pan so that one screen is not just like the size of the TV screen. You'll actually be able to move around and the camera will move with you, but then eventually you'll come to the edge and then you'll go on to another screen. And I think the map does a good job of kind of guiding you through this. But other than that, you're going to find a lot of doorways, and they can lead into dungeons that you're going down into buildings, into tunnels to traverse. And something that's really nice is fast travel is very ubiquitous in this game. It's not even explained. It's just provided to you almost instantly as you start the game, and a nice high frequency of fast travel points. So let's talk progression in this game. So there's going to be some strange interwebbing of doing main quests and minor quests, of leveling up your character, of advancing or unlocking different forms to be able to progress. And they're going to vary in terms of whether it's optional, whether it's mandatory. But your main quests are going to be pretty basic and kind of overarching for what you're trying to do in the game. So it could be like make your way to this location or collect X number of these major things. And the order that you do a lot of these things are going to be open-ended, as well as the method of getting to certain places could be open-ended. There could be multiple ways of doing it, multiple orders for things. But alongside that, there's sort of like this vague self-discovery of the different dominoes needed to get to said place or collect certain things. I mean, most of it is going to be you have to go into dungeons and beat all the enemies and then go to the boss and beat the boss and get the collectible or whatever. But there are going to be a lot of intricacies for like how to get to certain places that you need to unlock things to do, and that's not really spelled out for you, but it is something that you will realize as you get used to sort of the minor intricacies. So let's talk about some of the minor quests that you're going to receive throughout the game, and these are going to be pretty similar in terms of like collecting things. It could be beating challenges, it could be going into optional dungeons, and you'll receive these from NPCs. You can even buy some of these from merchants. Some of these minor quests are repeatable. And so with your quests, what you're going to realize is that a way that you are progressing is gaining XP by doing things. And when you gain XP, your character will level up. Anytime your character levels up, their basic stats will increase, like their max health, their speed, their attack physical or magical, their defense physical or magical. And it's also nice because you can actually also purchase some stat increases from merchants if you get enough currency. But this is going to be important because you'll find very easily, especially when you look on the map, is that dungeons have sort of a recommended level. And if you're like level 15 and a dungeon is level 16, you could try it, but I feel like the difference can seem exponential instead of just linear. That's just trying to get you to understand that, like, hey, you're recommended that you do things to level up before you get to this main dungeon or something like that. A major way that you're going to progress in this game and you're going to play throughout it is having to do with the different forms that you will get. And these essentially work like classes or jobs, like a job system. And so different jobs have different moves, different stat variations of your main character stats. So when you change to a certain form, it might, you know, lower your health, but your speed will go up or something like that. And they'll have different feels to them. They'll have different ways of traversing, different speeds of traversing. And some of these are simple, like the knight, the archer. You know, if you're someone who's played any Final Fantasy game, a lot of these should be pretty obvious, but then you'll have ones that are a little out of left field, like the rat or the horse and a lot of different animals. So I like the variation here, and it's some of it you might expect, some of it you might not, and I like the synergy of how they're sort of blended together. But what's interesting about these forms is they all kind of branch on this screen, on the menu, in like a web. And the web all leads back to your main character, who is quote-unquote nobody. And the way that you sort of advance and unlock different forms is by leveling them up. And you'll see on this screen that each one of them will have a grade for what level you're at. And the way that you level them up is by completing the form quests that will pop up. So we talked about major quests, minor quests, but when you switch to a different form, what you'll see is that there are form quests that are specific for that form, and it could just be like, kill a certain number of enemies with this move, with this character, or apply this status this amount of times, or kill enemies with this status this amount of times, or things like that. And so as you start to complete these, you'll see that you're getting XP for your main character, just like you would for normal quests, but you're also getting XP for your different form that will lead to that form leveling up. And every form starts at a grade of F, and so you're trying to get them to D, to C, to B, to A, all the way to S, potentially. And so when you level up the different forms, they'll unlock different abilities or different moves that they can use. So all forms are going to start with just one ability on the X button, but then as you level them up, you'll get different abilities that'll do different things, potentially different status effects. And as well, once you get leveled up and once you get new moves, you'll have access to more form quests. So it might be once you get a new move, like you get a new quest that says like, hey, do this move X amount of times or kill X amount of enemies with this new move, or something like that. And one of the major things about leveling up your forms is this is how you access new forms. So like I said, it works kind of like a food web, and you'll see that like if you go to where the horse branches off of the main character, nobody, there'll be maybe one or two paths that go from the horse and connect to something that you don't know what it is yet. And you'll see on those lines connecting to the new thing, letters. So you might see from the horse like a C on one line and a B on another. And what that means is once you unlock level C of the horse, it'll unlock that next form. So you have sort of this incentive to upgrade your different forms to access new forms. And some of them are going to be intricate in terms of the food web situation. So for example, there's one form that you need like a level C of two different forms to access it. So, and it'll be pretty obvious when you look at the form screen in the menu, like how you're going to be able to unlock certain things. But this is really important because you're unlocking different things for different forms, but you're also leveling up your main character. And as you level up your main character, certain like overarching abilities are going to be presented to you. So for example, once you level up your character a certain amount, you'll be able to mix and match some of the face button moves as you have new forms unlocked. So for example, if you get a new form up to like level C or something like that, you'll make it so that on their triangle button, they're allowed to use an ability from any other form that's available that you've unlocked. So this is going to open up a whole slew of customization options. You'll also have slots for passive abilities. So each form has its own passive ability, but you're able to eventually have up to four passive abilities that you can mix and match from different classes. And what's really nice is everything is saved for whatever you have on the form that you're using. So for example, if you're swapping back and forth between forms pretty quickly, it's going to remember that like, okay, so for the magician form, you have its main ability and then two other abilities that you've swapped in for something that the horse uses. And then you have these two other passive abilities from two other different forms. So it's going to remember that. So you'll be able to kind of create a build in each one of your forms potentially, and then have it save and easily access it. And you can always go back and customize it. So this might explode some people's heads, but for some people, this might be really fun, and you might get really creative with some of the different combinations you're able to do. But overall, what you're looking at is a complex job system crossed with sort of fast-paced action, being able to swap forms in real time, like a wheel will pop up where you can easily swap between them. And it'll also allow you to combine different attack types, which you'll discover what they are, different status effect applications, and you're going to have to manage different cooldown times, as well as being able to recover mana and health with regular attacks or moves so that you can manage your character in crazy situations. And of course, for progression, as you get new forms, what you're going to find is that some of them actually are able to traverse different things. So you might unlock something like the turtle and find out that, like, oh, the turtle can swim. Now you can get across these giant bodies of water. So different things like that will open up and sort of allow you to progress in places that you couldn't before. And of course, a lot of what you're going to be doing is action combat when you are coming across swarms of enemies. And you're going to find swarms of enemies sometimes in dungeons, sometimes a lot in the overworld. And this is going to be sort of the bread and butter. You're going to be attacking a bunch of enemies at the same time. So, you know, customizing your builds or trying out different abilities that can do AoEs or apply status effects. You'll also encounter things like enemies having different seals that need to be broken. And what that means is they need to be hit with a certain attack type first, and then they can be hit with anything. So different things like that will definitely be introduced to you, and you'll sort of discover what to do in those situations. But in terms of the enemies that you come across, most of the time they're coming in hordes. They're going to be varied size and varied speed, health, defense, attack styles. What's really interesting is some of them are projectiles, some of them are melee, some of them are a bit of both, and some of them have heat-seeking things. Some of them are pretty unique in terms of how they attack you or what they're guessing you're going to do or where you're going to be. You're going to get hit with a lot of these things at the same time, so I do like the variation. And what's nice is when you're in a dungeon, it'll eventually end in a boss room, and this is kind of a challenge thing because it's going to be waves of different spawns of enemies that are going to pop in periodically, and then you basically just have to survive the different waves. But in terms of pacing, I do feel in general that there's minimal tutorialization. You'll definitely get prompts or see different things when something new is introduced to you. Like I said, like the different seals on the enemies, you'll get a little blurb about that. But communication in general is minimal in this game. And we talked a lot about leveling up forms. This is going to vary in terms of when it's mandatory and when it's optional, like when you're pushing to level up a character or level up a form all the way to the max level when you don't really need to. It's interesting because you can do that, but what I found a bunch of times throughout this game is I found a form and a customization that was comfortable for me. And so I sat in that for a while, and I can advance a lot in the game, but eventually I hit a wall where it's like, okay, now you have to traverse with this thing, and now you have to level this thing up because you need to find this form and use it for whatever. Like, you're going to eventually find that. It's just not spelled out for you. And along those lines, the game is really hinged on open exploration. It's very go until you can't. Again, minimal communication. You're going to find many options or directions that you can go. And so this really reminds you of like old NES Zelda, where it's like there's really no instructions. You're just kind of fending for yourself. And then you're going to keep going until you hit a bottleneck or you bounce off of something and you can't explore or traverse anymore. It's interesting because the main path is going to be limited in some ways based on things that we talked about, like level discrepancy or not having the right traversal or sometimes not having the right currency or enough of it. And so this is really going to limit you and actually encourage you to explore. And I think that's where the game does itself justice, because leveling up the forms, getting used to different forms, and just kind of hammering away at leveling up or expanding the moveset or finding new forms that have new traversal, that's really where the game is the most fun, I feel. So having that natural encouragement to explore just the options that are in front of you and the paths that are in front of you is nice, but I could definitely see why some gamers might get a little overwhelmed by that. But the game itself is a quest explosion. Like we talked about, you're going to have main quests, you're going to have minor quests, you're going to have form quests, and these are all available to you and you see them. This is also something that could potentially be overwhelming, because at any given time, you could have one or two main quests, you could have 5 to 10 minor quests, and then for each form, you could have anywhere between 2 and 4. So your quest book is almost more like a task list. And some of them are just like, do this move 100 times or something like that. But others are like, find these 5 crystals or explore and find these upgrade things or this currency. But again, that synergy of like exposing you to everything and just seeing you kind of play in that sandbox and level things up and find the path yourself is pretty interesting. And something else that's going to kind of gatekeep, we talked about level discrepancy or being able to traverse. You're also going to collect certain things. You're going to collect stars, and having enough of these is going to be another way to gatekeep your ability to move forward in the main path, because accessing main dungeons, you're going to have a certain amount of these stars and give them up to open that dungeon. And again, fueling that synergy, because you're going to get these as quest rewards. You can buy them sometime from merchants. But in all honesty, like, if you're just pacing yourself along with exploring the different forms, completing quests, you're going to naturally find yourself in a place where, like, you just have enough of the currency to continue the main quest once you're at that level. The map is super helpful, and this is going to guide the pacing a lot, in my opinion, because it's constantly going to get populated with new information. Like, anytime you find a new dungeon, it'll have its location on the map. It'll tell you a lot of information, like what special things you might see in there, what level you have to be, how many stars it's going to cost. Anytime there are new quests available from NPCs, there'll be an exclamation point on the map where their location is to go find it, to go complete it, as well as the map communicating sort of terrain or the landscape. So if you notice that there's, you know, a certain terrain that now you can access or traverse because you have a new form, all of a sudden you're able to backtrack pretty easily and not have to, like, remember areas like Metroidvania type games. And it's also going to list all the save points, all the fast travel locations. So the map is really going to be a major help for you. But there are certainly advanced things. So like I said, there are a ton of side quests that are quote-unquote minor quests. Some of these are challenge dungeons where, like, you have to complete the whole dungeon and not die at all. You can also upgrade the different moves that the different forms will have with a special currency. You can upgrade the passive moves with the special currency as well. And of course, you can at merchants actually buy attack and defense upgrades for physical versus magical. And in terms of accessibility, we talked about a lot of the optional content just now. What I like is the difficulty transparency. Like, if you are underleveled for something, you'll know right away by just looking at what level you have to be to go to a dungeon. So that can really save you a lot of time and frustration. So you can go bounce off and try to do something else to level up and be ready for that dungeon. But the game is open explore. And again, minimal information. If you're a veteran of these types of games, you'll love the freedom and the challenge of your instincts when you're trying to look for new things. If you're a rookie with this stuff, it can kind of be overwhelming. It has that potential, as well as just having too many options. But one thing that is really nice is there's a very high frequency of save points throughout the game, as well as a high frequency of fast travel points. So you'll always have, you know, a save point close by or a fast travel point close by. And if you happen to die or lose all your health, you'll just go back to the last save point you were at. Or if you're in one of those optional challenge dungeons, you'll just go back to the front of the dungeon. Although just about every dungeon at the front will have a save point right there. So plenty of access for not worrying about losing progress and also being able to travel pretty quickly anywhere on the map. Let's talk about the vibe of Nobody Saves the World, and let's start with the visuals. So this is super colorful, it's very cartoonish, and similar to their other games, like we talked about Guacamelee and Severed, but not as sort of sharp or cut and dry with the edges, and a lot of stronger outlines sort of in black. Something that you notice right away is that the different forms, so basically all of the forms that are you, that's not other NPCs, they're going to have just black where their eyes are, and they'll also be sort of outlined in black, a lot more defined. But a lot of the edges and the forms that you're seeing, they're not as sharp and as, like, trapezoidal as some of their last games. But a lot of the characters and NPCs, very silly looking. Silly fully features a good size variation of just two people standing next to each other, some oddities in the way they look, the way their facial features are. They all look a little bit awkward, and so that silliness of their past games definitely comes through here. The different enemies that you'll see, so you'll see ones that are like spider-like, there are mutants that are spiky blobs, some are demons, a lot of good multi-tone coloration, a little bit of light and dark mix, primarily dark, but maybe some of their underbellies are a little lighter, but just overall, just kind of wacky, crazy different forms of things that you're seeing. Cues and indicators are a big thing here. So enemy attacks, projectiles, they're going to be colored a certain, whether it's on the floor, where they're going to hit you, or, you know, these pink little balls that are coming out and moving at interesting paces. But the projectiles are going to be something obvious when they're moving. Status effect meters are a big thing. So whether it's happening to you or to enemies, building up poison on enemies will have sort of like a faint purple skull and a meter that's coming around it. And when they are poisoned, it'll get like fully brightened or fully colored in, and then slowly tick away as they're losing health. So that differentiation is something that you'll notice right away, and you're going to use a lot to notice when enemies are poisoned, and then you can hit them with another attack that's going to potentially do a lot of damage. You also see indicators for if moves need a cooldown or if you're out of mana. So in the bottom right corner, you'll see the different face button moves that you have assigned, and if they're cooling down, they're sort of like grayed out, and then you'll see the meter of them slowly ticking back when they're ready. If you're out of mana to use, it'll sort of just be outlined in red. It is fairly obvious, but it's not immediately in your purview, so I found it a little frustrating sometimes just knowing whether I was out of something or whether something needed to be refreshed, and I'm, you know, button mashing a little bit. And when you're low on health, like the screen kind of gets a little veiny around the outside. So similar to what some things might be seen in like a survival horror game or in certain action games. The audio, there is some sound effects that can be overwhelming at times. Like you're dealing with hordes, so this cacophony of noises of the enemies and their projectiles and what you're doing, all that sort of like barreled on top of each other. I wish the sound effects were a little more clean, especially with the different alerts, because again, I'm having that issue where I'm not really seeing when my move is cooling down or if I'm out of mana or something like that. Maybe that's just my fault for, you know, not using the whole screen with my eyes. But when I'm dealing with hordes, it can be tough to know when I'm out of something unless I specifically look in that corner, which can be frustrating if I'm dealing with a horde right in front of me and I need to focus on that. So I wish maybe the audio sound effects could help out a little bit. They might be there, but I'm not hearing them. Like if something is cooled down, like if I could hear a ticker or something. I don't know the best method, but it would be nice to have that synergy. The music in this game is nice. It's sort of this underlying readiness, like you're ready to dive into dungeons and there's going to be hordes of enemies. It's definitely not as standout as Guacamelee. I mean, it's really tough to beat the soundtrack for Guacamelee because it was super, you know, Mexican mariachi, and it really captured the feel of that game. But the music in here definitely gives you some juice to keep chugging along. I'm reminded a lot of like Game Boy style music, but like dungeon delving. It's got this sort of grittiness or spookiness at times, but other times like it has sort of the synthesizer 80s feel to it. So I do like that, and the beats are, you know, a little repetitive, but like just like getting you in the mood to, you know, deal with hordes and stuff like that. And finally, the themes and the settings. So in case you don't know this developer and their previous games, not taking itself too seriously here. And that is definitely the name of their game. So silly dialogue. We talked about sort of the visuals of some of the characters that you'll talk to, but like some of their one-liners are just silliness. The jokes that they make or the funny quests that you're going to do, all just really charming and very lighthearted. And your character, like you are nobody, quote unquote nobody, like that's who you are. Like they call you a nobody. So lots of references to that and NPCs making jokes. And the setting that you're in, sort of, I guess, medieval magic. You got knights, you got wizards, you got thieves, you got different guilds and different towns, and then what allows you to change forms is this magic wand that belongs to this master wizard that you have. And so all the stuff that you do is going to be intertwined with this. So specific quests that you're doing, even the interactions that you have with people can change depending on the form that you're in. Like if you're a knight versus if you're a horse or another animal. So I just like that sort of attention to detail. But overall, I just feel like the game is very lighthearted. It's very self-aware, and just a nice, light, silly atmosphere that is really enjoyable. Thank you. All right, let's wrap up the conversation about Nobody Saves the World. I think this is a great game. It's fun, it's light, it's got silly vibes, it's got these cartoon animals and sort of caricatures of different characters, all kinds of lightheartedness and silliness. Open exploration, overworld adventure, again, really a lot of callbacks to Trigger Witch, to Link to the Past, a lot of old dungeon games like that. A lot of quick action, a lot of enemy hordes, and I think that can be overwhelming at times, but the depth beyond that with how you're customizing different things, adding different moves and abilities and putting them together, combining your different classes or abilities from other jobs and things like that. There is depth that is required here, but there's a lot of things that you can do on your own. You can max level everything. You can do all the challenges. So you can really kind of find your niche in here and dig as deep as you want. I do feel like it can seem a bit aimless beyond just seeing the different classes or leveling things up to see what else there is. I do think the combat at times can get comfortable and a little rinse and repeat, especially when you find a form that is like your go-to. And unless there are specific requirements for you to change for traversal or whatever, you might not do it. And I do think that for some sort of rookie players or players that aren't into the depth too much, it can be a little overwhelming, especially the agency for what you can do or how you can solve things or the lack of communication or full transparency. That can be overwhelming, especially if you're a gamer that looks for linear games, because I don't think you're going to necessarily find it here. In terms of value, I think 25 for an MSRP might be a little high. I think, and I know this seems a little nitpicky, that $20 would be better, like a $19.99 price tag. I feel like that would be better. And I feel like for the average gamer, like if I were recommending it to my friend, I would say anything between $15 and $20 if it's on sale. I think that that's a really good price. And I think that is what works for this game. I paid about $22 for it. I feel like that was okay for me. I might have wanted it at like $17 or $18. But overall, I feel like it's a lot of value here. Like I said, fun, charming. It scratches that class customization, that job system itch, and the curiosity of finding more things. So I feel like if you're somebody that's into that, you're really gonna like this. For me, I don't know if I'll finish this game, but I'm really glad that I played it. I feel like I could pick it up at any time. But like I said, a light, silly approach to having something complex and having a lot of depth, and the uniqueness of being able to combine those things, I feel like is really the reason that I highly recommend this game. All right, that's going to wrap it up for this episode. Stay tuned for our next episode to see what new game we found for you.